Welcome to The Unsettled Garden, a podcast about the politics of gardening in Canada. I'm Alison Ralph, a writer and gardener living on the treaty lands and territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit. And today we're talking with Dancing Water Sandy of the Sequipemec and Cree Nations. She is an Indigenous Knowledge Keeper, First Nations curriculum teacher, and she serves as a council member at Williams Lake First Nation in British Columbia. Welcome, Dancing Water.
Hi, well, nice to meet you.
So I stumbled across your, you wrote an article, co-wrote an article. It was published in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health, and it's called Gardening in the Ashes, the Possibilities and Limitations of Gardening to Support Indigenous Health and Well-being in the Context of Wildfires and Colonialism. So reading the article really spoke to me, and it sparked a lot of sort of questions for me, particularly about the way that you spoke about Indigenous approaches to gardening and nature as being grounded in relationship and reciprocity. I wonder if we could start there.
When we consider forming a relationship with our plant friends and animal friends and those that slither, crawl, climb, swim and fly on Good Mother Earth, we always have to understand that it's reciprocal, right? That when we begin any relationship, it has to go both ways. It can't be just one-sided. And especially when we approach like the gardening in nature, and I spoke a bit about like the chain of care. So right from like the plant, right from germination, all the way to when it has finished its life cycle. So these plants, they have had ancestors just like we do, right? Plants have ancestors that have been here long before us. And those plants will be here long after us. That particular plant might be finished its life cycle, but it has passed on parts of itself to germinate new plants and new life cycles. And to acknowledge that is a really big deal. It's kind of like how we acknowledge the rocks in our territory. We call them grandfathers because they come from the mountains. And the mountains have been here long before us, and they'll continue to be here long after us. And they've witnessed everything throughout that time, that duration. And so that connection and that acknowledgement, first and foremost, like when I meet you today, I'm meeting not just your voice and you and who you are in this moment. I'm meeting the culmination of your life, the culmination of your life experiences. Yeah. And I also have the honor of meeting your ancestors because you are here because of them, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then after meeting you, or you, like our connection today, it could change the path forward. And then ultimately, it could end up changing how we move forward, right? Something we say or something we learn today can impact who we are and how we move forward, forever changing the course, right? So forever changing your ancestors in a way. And that's an important acknowledgement to make as well. So knowing those two things, right, that's a perfect place to start off from, right? So just knowing that. And then when we go into the idea of gardening, or we go into the idea of being in nature, the relationship we have starts in that way, acknowledging that those things have been here long before me and they'll be here long after me, and I'm just a visitor. So when I go to harvest, I have to be grateful and thankful, and I have to bring gifts, and I have to bring a way of being that encompasses good nature, goodness, healing, support of the plants, support of the world around me. So if I go and I'm grouchy and I say I'm not wanting to be here, I'm not wanting to harvest, this is nuisance, like whatever bad things you think, like it's raining and blah, 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 the road was bumpy and however,
I don't want to be here.
You bring that energy with you, and it's the same as going into somebody's house. If I went to your house and I'd never met you before, and I'm going to take some things out of your house and I'm grouchy the whole time I do it, that interaction isn't going to go very well. You're going to be like, first and foremost, who are you?
No.
Why are you taking my belongings? And you need to get out. That's the same respect you need to have for the world around you, right? Like, you're going into the home of these creatures, these animals, the spiders, the winged ones. You're going into the home of these plants, right? Into their community. And you have to graciously offer yourself to them and introduce yourself and say, hey, like, you know, I'm going to give you a gift. I'm here. I'm here to share. I'm here to learn. I'm here to harvest. I'm here to give back. And you begin in that way. And so we often do an offering of some kind, whether it's a tobacco offering or a medicine offering, or sometimes you can bring like jelly beans, because it's known that there's in Cree storytelling, there's little people, right? And they live out in the world, and sometimes when things go missing or things get put in a different place, it's the little people, right? And they like jelly beans. And they like little things that suit their size, right? And they really like red, I've been told. And so often I'll put out some red jelly beans just in case, like, there's little folks out there that haven't been, you know, tended to for a while. And you put offerings in a clean place. And by a clean place, I mean you will put something where it's not going to be run over by a vehicle or, you know, like stepped on or whatever. You try to put it in a clean place so that it's tucked away and it's offered so that it can return to Mother Earth in a good way, right? And so the offerings could be medicines, they could be the jelly beans, they could be something that you've made out of plant medicines that you know that can go back to Mother Earth and into the soil or onto the trees or whatever that, and then you're not harming, right? It's a gift. It's something you're gifting. Like, sometimes we make things and we realize that the ants like it, right? So we'll do an offering that way.
Yeah.
And we're offering in gratitude for a beautiful day, gratitude for coming there, gratitude for the folks that are with you, you know, gratitude for, if it's raining, for the, you know, watering of Mother Earth, right? Whatever it looks like, you are expressing gratitude for that. And you're grateful for the harvest that you will have that day, for the plants that do share themselves with you, and for the resources that are there that you come upon. Because sometimes you go for something and you end up with something else. And like, we like to think we're in control, but we're not. We just have to let go of that.
I totally hear you on that.
And that's the thinking. So we begin with acknowledging that ancestral way of being, where we've been, who we are today, and where we're going in the future. We start by having some gratitude and giving a gift before we even begin to look around at what we want to harvest. And that's kind of the beginning, right? When you look at being grounded in relationship and reciprocity. It's kind of long-winded, but in short, we're in long. Oh, that's the answer to that,
beautiful.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I'm 100% sitting here soaking it in. I'm just telling you. So that's a beautiful way of description of the starting point. So you sort of talked about that little piece of feeling like we're in control and when we're not. And I feel like you talked about that a little bit in the article as well, just that difference between a natural garden and that Euro-Western approach. Can you talk to me about what's a natural garden like?
A naturally occurring garden is basically when you leave your home and you take a walk out in the woods and everything that is there. It's a place that has not been disturbed by machines, by road building or infrastructure, things like that. So some gardens, depending on your what you like to harvest or what you're looking for. Some gardens look more enticing than others just because of the knowledge berry, right? So if you see berries, most people recognize that as a naturally occurring garden. They're like, oh, look at the berry garden. We're going to harvest the berries. But if you are like myself and you utilize plant medicines, you utilize bark, you utilize things that grow in the water, then gardens look different, right? The resources in them appear different because you're really just forming a relationship with different parts of Mother Earth, right?
Well, and you have that additional layer of knowledge of the relationship of what the plants have to offer. And, you know, that certainly a lot of us, me included, me especially, don't know. And so you can spot those things. You have that relationship already established with those plants.
And the relationship, like I was born urban indigenous.
Okay.
And I was raised that way. And I didn't really know about the relationship I could have until I was probably in my late 20s and early 30s.
Okay.
And I think it was a real blessing to go from being urban indigenous and not having much of a connection to natural gardens or even access to natural gardens. And then to be able to effectively go out on the land and understand the territory and what's growing when and why and what things complement each other, what things like to grow together naturally. When we look at gardens, many of our expert gardeners that construct gardens and build them and make them for communities, many of them are aware of the friends that food makes, right? Like, oh, I like to grow with these guys, put us in together, where they're just like people, right? Like, oh, I love those guys, bring them over, and then flourish, right?
Yeah.
Naturally occurring gardens are much the same. They're like, oh, there you are, let me join you, and they connect. And so often it's quite lovely to be able to harvest something and know that you're going to probably encounter another resource or another plant medicine that you'd like to share with, right?
Yeah, that you already know is likely to have a relationship with that other plant. So what's a good starting point, do you think, for shifting our thinking from that resource-based control approach to gardening to a more relationship-based approach?
So one of the key shifting or key pieces to shifting from resource-based and control to a more relationship-based is to understand that reciprocity I was telling you about, that plant relationship.
Yeah.
To know that you're a guest, you're not, like it isn't, that isn't there for you. Like it is, but you're there as a guest, right? Like those plants, those medicines, those everything that's there is for everyone, right? We're all interconnected. We're all here at the same time, at the same place for a reason.
Yeah.
And you have to acknowledge that. And so to think that those things are there for you is really, like, is it lineal thinking? Like singular? It's very ego-based because they're not. Like, there's so many things happening. If you were to lay down where you end up and watch everything and observe everything, you would understand that there is so much happening without you interfering. When you get there, you can't just smash around and take everything and leave.
Yeah.
Right? Even bring a gift when you get there and you do the offering and you say the words of gratitude and you have a happy heart and you bring fellow harvesters with you, right? To pass the knowledge, pass the teachings. When you bring folks with you, sometimes they share their teachings with you. Sometimes you share your teachings with them. Sometimes it's because they can't afford to go or you can't afford to go. So you go together so that you can both go, right?
Yeah.
And so that relationship to each other and to the garden, to the naturally occurring gardens, that we don't control where things grow. We don't control how they grow, why they grow, but we do know we want to leave them better off than when we arrived. So if you see that a big log is impeding this plant's growth because it's like bending unnaturally and it's having a hard time to produce its fruit or its leaves or its bark, whatever, then maybe just move the log a little bit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I see that this is on your foot. Let me take it off of there for you. Like, stretch out.
Let me be a good neighbor and help you out.
Right. And when you like harvest from these plants, sometimes there's branches that are broken or branches that are using an extreme amount of the plant's energy to go off in a different direction that really isn't serving the plant, right? Sometimes you see that plants have a disease in a section and it's impeding that plant's ability to flourish. So maybe just prune those things, right?
Yeah.
Take away the branches, prune away the disease, support the plant to grow in a really foundational direction that will help it. So like just pruning a plant, giving back to stop, like take away things that are impeding its growth. Those are all very lovely ways to show the plant that you see the struggle is real and you're going to support it.
I'm just having this vision of that berry garden that you talked about earlier and, you know, just the recognition of going to a spot like that and, you know, maybe feeling tempted to pick all the berries and head home and just enjoy them and, you know, leaving it as it was. But I think from what you're describing, it would be better to acknowledge that, you know, finding these berries, they're not just there as a one little miracle just for you. They're part of that ecosystem and they're part of, you know, the birds eat the berries as well. And maybe there's other people that will come and harvest some of the fruit and maybe, you know, maybe spot those, as you say, those branches that are growing in the wrong direction or that are not serving the plant, and you tidy them up and then you leave it better for the next people to come along. I love that.
And it isn't necessarily about the next people that come along. It's the next community member, right? So community members could be bears. Mm. It could be squirrels. It could be birds, deer. It could be whatever community members. So we move away from the people centric and we move towards like communion interconnection. And so although we may never see that bush again, because quite often when I go out into the boonies, I don't like track everything and map everything and label everything. I'm lucky if I even remember what day I went last year. You know, like I try to keep that relationship, but I'm not so scientific to write everything down and track and whatever. But I do go kind of in the same neighborhood, right? Like if you know that neighborhood has certain supplies, you go back. But it is more about just making sure that all of the community members have access and that will benefit from you connecting with that plant that day, right? So when you're harvesting bark, you're not ending the tree's life by your harvest. You're taking away just enough to utilize without harming the tree, right? And that's a delicate balance. But in a neighborhood of trees, you want to make sure that you're not harvesting in a way that damages the whole neighborhood, right? You just want a little bit. And it's hard sometimes for people to realize that although there are many trees in that neighborhood, you shouldn't be taking from more than just a couple. And it's easy to want to take from all of them because they're all standing right there. They have to, like, trees have a connection to each other and they communicate with one another. And if one of them is been harvested from, the other ones can support it, right? But if we harvest from all of them, then they all struggle together.
That's it for The Unsettled Garden this week. Stay tuned for part 2 of my conversation with Dancing Water Sandy in the next episode. I'm Allison Ralph. This show is produced by Lead Podcasting. If you like what you heard, be sure to follow the show on your favorite podcast player. And if you're looking for me, I'll be in the garden.